Hi everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Home Practice with Hallie. I'm your host, Hallie Miraglada, here with the mission to make the tools of yoga more accessible to all bodies, no matter where in the world you make your home. Today's episode is an interview with a special guest, an entrepreneur, yoga instructor, investor, and speaker, who's passionate about reducing the wellness gap and creating innovative solutions in health and wellness for communities in need. I was fortunate enough to sit down with this incredible human being last month while she was on tour in Chicago with one of her companies, and I can't wait to dig into all the work she does. But first, please give a warm welcome to our guest today, Nicole Cardoza. Nicole, hello.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, Nicole, welcome, and thank you so much for being our guest. You are a huge powerhouse and a very admirable disruptor in the wellness industry today. You've been featured in Self, Mind Body Green, named on Forbes 30 Under 30 list, and were recently on the cover of Yoga Journal. You're also the founder of at least two companies that I know of, Yoga Foster, and more recently, Reclamation Ventures. I want to hear about all the incredible reasons why everyone is taking notice, but I'd love to get to know you a little better on a personal level first. Is that okay?
That sounds great. Yeah.
Awesome. Nicole, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in southeastern Connecticut, almost on the border of Rhode Island, actually.
Nice. In your formative years, did you have any role models who introduced you to or normalized meditation, wellness, or mindfulness?
No.
No.
Yeah, that was not a part of my childhood.
How were you first introduced to yoga?
I mean, I knew about it and I'd seen people doing it on TV. I just didn't think it was something that like I would do or that I would be interested in. When I moved to New York City for college, a bunch of people on my dorm were going to yoga, and I'm like, that just sounds like a thing that everybody's doing, so I should join in. And I really loved it.
Yeah. You're a yoga instructor too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where did you become a yoga teacher?
So I did my 200-hour teacher training at Yoga Works, but before then, I actually started teaching yoga and as part of an after-school program. Super unqualified, definitely shouldn't have been in that role. But the school is looking for a way to integrate more movement into the classroom. It was part of an after school program and the kids didn't have an opportunity to play outside. And so it was just a really easy way to get kids moving. They knew I was interested in yoga. They just wanted to see if I did a couple poses with the kids, if it resonated. And I got really passionate about teaching from there.
That's amazing. Do you have any yoga teachers or individuals who've been influential or an important part of your journey as a yogi or yoga instructor?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I could make a really long list. I initially trained with Chrissy Carter at Yoga Works, which is really inspiring. I think she really leads her classes and her trainings with intention. So I really appreciated that. And then I did a 200-hour out with the Africa Yoga Project. Mm. And so there was just so many incredible instructors that I worked with when I was out in Nairobi that still push me as a teacher and always encouraging me to be better and keep learning.
Do you prefer teaching yoga to kids or to adults?
To kids.
To kids. How come?
Kids are much more willing to be open about how they feel. And they're less accustomed to hiding things, not necessarily hiding things from themselves, but from other people. And I think that they are more comfortable taking up space because they are less acclimated to the world that we live in that makes us all feel really uncomfortable sometimes. And so as a teacher, there's something really rewarding about that because kids will tell you how they feel. They'll tell you if they like a pose or not. They'll tell you if they want to practice or not. Mm-hmm. And I think as grownups, it takes us a little bit longer. So you don't get that kind of response as a teacher, selfishly.
I can see that. I think you and I are about the same age, and I'm just blown away by how many different skill sets you bring to the table. What was your background of study, or like, how did you acclimate yourself to all of these different arenas?
That's really funny. I think you kind of learn how to do everything on your own when you're doing everything alone for a long time. And so starting a nonprofit and being underfunded and undersupported teaches you, like, if you want something done, you're going to have to figure it out. Mm-hmm. I studied international business management, which I don't think I use that often. but I also did teach myself how to code, and that was really helpful for building the tech platform that Yoga Foster has now. Mm. And having a better understanding of how we can use tech, not just for profit, but for purpose in making things accessible. So that's where I came from. That's my background.
It's amazing. This podcast is usually about how to develop tools for a home yoga practice. And we'll dig into your recent nomadic lifestyle in just a little bit. But what do you like to include in your home yoga practice?
So I've been a nomad on and off for the past 3 years. So my home practice is the only thing that I have that makes other places feel like home. So for me, and I never, always have a mat with me or, props or anything like that. So to me, it's a really good playlist. It's giving myself time grounded on the floor to understand just how I'm feeling before I start moving any further than that. And just allowing it to be whatever it needs to be at that time. I used to try to be like 60 minutes of yoga every morning. And now it's like, if child's pose is where I need to be for 2 minutes before I leave for the day, that's what my practice looks like.
I love that. Do you find that your practice is a mix of asana, breathing, meditation, or is it just like really whatever you need at that time?
Whatever I need at that time, it really depends on the day. It's often a blend of meditation and asana, but sometimes it's just breathing,
Do you have any breathing techniques that you love doing in particular?
One that I do all the time that we use for kids and we use in our programs at Yoga Foster, my nonprofit, is flower and candle breathing. Ooh. Which is just a really fun visual way to inhale through the nose and exhale through the mouth as a way to calm down. I have anxiety and it really helps me. So you pretend to hold a flower in one hand and you pretend to hold a candle in the other. You smell the flower and then you blow out the candle. And if you practice that over and over again, I find it really helps like lower my heart rate and settle my body and just make me feel more grounded. But it's really just inhaling through the nose and exhaling through pursed lips.
Would you be willing to guide us through a short little version of that? Just a couple minutes? That'd be awesome.
Yeah, sure. So find a comfortable seat wherever you are. And maybe that seat is standing, leaning against a wall, or lying down, whatever feels right for you. And we'll practice a couple of rounds of flower and candle breathing. So first, pretend to hold a flower in one hand. You can think about what it looks like, what color it is, if it's a big flower or a small flower. Maybe you have one flower in your hand or a bunch, a whole bouquet. Good. And then in the other hand, hold a candle. And imagine what the candle looks like. It can be a really big, thick candle in a glass jar, or a skinny birthday candle you might see on top of a cake. It might have a smell. And there's a gentle flame, and maybe it's flickering back and forth. Let all of your breath out. And then smell the flower. Take a big breath in through your nose, bring the flower up to your nose. Imagine what it smells like. Hold that for a minute. And then turn to your candle and gently blow the candle out, nice and slow, breathing out through your mouth. Beautiful. You can try that again. Smell the flower, drawing in to the lungs, maybe to the belly, and breathing out to the mouth, blowing out that candle. We'll try that one more time now. Breathing in, drawing all the way up, drawing the crown of the head up to the sky. And then exhale, blow that candle out. Allow yourself to settle more deeply in your seat, maybe against the wall. And then shake out your hands, let go of the flower, let go of the candle.
I think we should just do that for the rest of our time.
I really love the imagery, and I think holding something and having those tactical cues help students really ground themselves into how the breath can flow in and out of their bodies.
Yeah, I love when you asked like to visualize what kind of flower it was or like what the candle might smell like. There was a little bit of creativity there so people could make it really personal too. That's great. So Nicole, when I met you, it was through your capacity with Yoga Foster, which is an organization of which you are both the founder and the executive director, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Awesome. So for our listeners, if you have not yet heard of Yoga Foster, it's a national nonprofit that empowers educators with yoga and mindfulness resources in the classroom. Can you tell us a little bit about your path to founding this organization? Like what inspired you to make it happen?
Yeah, I mean, it really came from my initial work teaching in schools and just seeing, one, the impact that simple movement and mindfulness can have in the classroom. And also the barriers of accessing it for a lot of schools. There are so many teachers that would come to the program I was doing after school and be like, gosh, I wish you could be in my classroom all the time. And me being a very inexperienced yoga teacher and in addition, an inexperienced educator, I looked at them and I'm like, oh my goodness, you would be so much more powerful as an educator teaching this in your classroom all the time. You know these kids, you have deep relationships with them, and you have a better understanding of what they're going through outside of the classroom than I did getting to work with them once a week. And I really think that all of these practices are best when we carry them into our everyday life. And there's no better way for students to establish this practice than if they're able to do it, you know, repetitively in the classroom, right? Because, you know, it's one thing to be able to learn flower and candle breathing, but it's a different thing to be able to apply that before you're taking a big test, right? It's like taking the practice and knowing how to put it into action actually creates that relationship with the practice, I think, that helps it become, you know, something that we all talk about, that we're all listening to this podcast for, right? It takes it into our everyday in a way, I think, that's more powerful than trying to leave it on the mat, so to speak.
Yeah. So how does Yoga Foster work? Do teachers apply? Is there video content?
Yep. So the way it works is teachers can either sign up on our website or apply for a grant where they get all of these resources completely free of charge. If they sign up on our website, it's a heavily subsidized rate. We have an online self-paced teacher training. So like a yoga teacher training for school teachers that helps just to help empower every classroom with like the basics of yoga and mindfulness, simple postures, simple breathing techniques, basic flows. In addition to how this practice can resonate in a child's body and in their lived experience, you know, students are coming into classrooms with a whole bunch of different things based off of where they live and what's happened to them in their past. And we want to make sure that as we train teachers, the practice is culturally responsive and trauma-informed and accessible for all bodies. So we go through that training and then we offer a lesson plan. So short yoga breaks, long-form yoga classes, those are lesson plans that the teacher can download to administer in the classroom. We have mindfulness resources that they can use, videos that they can use, and worksheets and other take-home assignments so that students can bring this practice home.
That's amazing. In recent years, there's finally been some really great research coming out about the tangible benefits of mindfulness in the classrooms, both for kids and for educators, like improved focus, better emotional regulation, and reduced stress. I was reading recently that there's about 500,000 educators leaving the workforce every year. That's like a 20% turnover. And those environments are huge obstacles in being empathetic and having like present centered relationships. Have you been getting positive feedback about the tools provided by Yoga Foster?
Yeah. Because, you know, when any of us like teach this stuff, it's also a way for us to be able to practice it every day. And it gives the teachers an opportunity to be breathing and moving alongside their students. And then also taking this embodied practice into their own lives outside of the classroom. So we definitely have seen data that it can help reduce teacher burnout and teacher stress. And I think that's really important.
That's awesome. So part of the grant recipients or part of what they receive in addition to the video training can be mats. Is that correct? True?
Yeah, yoga mats.
So your dedication to sustainability and minimizing your carbon emissions of these mat shipments led you on a school bus tour across the nation to pick up and distribute yoga mats. That's so creative, and that's an amazing way to make connections, but I also imagine it was like exhausting. Can you tell us about that experience?
Yes, the answer is all of the above, yes. It was really, you know, today's actually the last day of our tour. It's really just been, thank you. It's been a really reflective day. It was such an incredible experience. It's a tour that I've wanted to do for a while. I think it, you know, driving around in a school bus talking about this work, I think really gives people the imagery about what this looks like. And has been a great way to call the wellness community into action in a really simple way. I think a lot of times, you know, people that practice yoga and mindfulness that might not be working in a school space or have kids in schools really understand what's happening in classrooms. But, you know, the irony that there's, you know, yoga studios that are a couple blocks away from schools that don't have comprehensive physical activity or adequate mental health resources, or quite simply space, physical space to move. It's really sad, you know, and it's hard to grapple. And so with the school bus tour, we really wanted to use the bus and use the events that we did to inform the community about what was happening and give them a simple way that they could support, hopefully as the start of a conversation as to how all of us can work to make schools more well.
Yeah. How many schools is Yoga Foster in right now?
Right now, we're working with about 600 different schools across the United States and about 3,000 yoga teachers, 3,000 school teachers.
Wow, that's incredible. How long were you on tour? You must have been to so many cities.
We were on tour for 2 months. We went to 12 different cities.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Nicole, did you drive the bus yourself?
I drove the bus for part of it, and then we brought on an incredible bus driver named Jody who helped with the rest.
That's awesome. You are a woman of many talents.
Driving a school bus is like driving a car, except it's bigger and a school bus. So, you know.
I bet parking was tricky in, like, you know, Chicago.
Parking with a 33-foot school bus is tricky everywhere. Yeah. So it was really nice. It was really amazing to be able to have a bus driver to be able to support with that. The bus basically had its own call sheet, had its own appearances, it had its own permits, it had its own lodging, and, you know, it really did become a big part of logistics around the tour. It was just figuring out how to get the bus from point A to point B, so it was very nice to have support on that.
Yeah. Were you happy with the activation you had from studios and communities?
Yeah, I think it was great. You know, we were just so lucky to be invited to so many different studios that really care about this work. And we're willing to support, help us get permitting, help us find space, host donation-based yoga classes, collect mats at their spaces in advance of us arriving. So that it was really beautiful to be able to roll into a community and see that kind of support.
So what about our listeners who are interested in supporting the growth and the continued success of Yoga Foster? How can they do it?
So the easiest way is to sponsor a student or sponsor a classroom. It actually only costs us $20 to bring yoga to one student for the whole school year, which is about the cost of one yoga class. So if you can, we would love for you to be able to sponsor a student. And then we're usually hosting fundraisers for classrooms that we want to serve on our social media accounts. So you can always look out for a way to support those as well. Right now we have more schools that are applying for grants than we have funding to support them. And we always want to alleviate the financial burden for school teachers as much as possible. School teachers are paying $500 to $700 out of pocket every year for classroom supplies and other things that their kids need. We had a teacher say that they couldn't afford our programs because they know they have to buy kids socks and gloves and mittens for when it gets colder. So I know that our community can really help in alleviating some of that and helping teachers have the opportunity to bring this work into their classrooms without adding extra strain to their already strained budgets.
Wow, hearing you say that $20 supports a kid's yoga in the classroom for a year really puts it in perspective, because in some cities I know here, sometimes drop-ins are like $30, right? And wellness shouldn't be only for people who can afford that.
Of course, yeah.
So that kind of brings us to our next point. On your website, you talk about closing the wellness gap. Can you share a little bit more about what that means in a big picture?
So, I mean, it ties into what we're seeing happening in classrooms, but that's not the only space where wellness isn't accessible. Yeah. In particular, in cities where there are $30 drop-in yoga classes or wellness classes. And it's a much bigger issue than just price. I think that the whole wellness industry has thrived on making wellness feel very exclusive, mm-hmm. And feel limited to a certain kind of person with a certain kind of body and a certain kind of bank account. Mm-hmm. And that leaves a lot of people out of the conversation. I mean, this is why I love your podcast too. Like, you talk about how yoga it's something that we can all drop into no matter where we are, no matter what spaces we call home. And that certainly isn't limited by the types of, you know, yoga pants that we buy or the types of studios that we can go to. I think what's happening is that practices of wellness that you don't need anything for kind of have this paywall in front of them that doesn't really exist, mm-hmm. Which is causing that wellness gap. In addition, there's like really big systemic issues that prevent people from being well, from having inadequate access to clean water, to healthy communities, to food deserts, to schools that prioritize academic performance over the overall well-being of their students. So we see a lot of systemic inequities causing a wellness gap in addition to other gaps that we need to be addressing.
Yeah. So recently, did this happen since I saw you in Chicago? You're also the founder of Reclamation Ventures.
That probably happened right around the time. Yeah.
Okay. So you're also the founder of Reclamation Ventures, which, as I understand it, is a fund that invests in high potential, underestimated entrepreneurs who are making wellness more accessible in their communities. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, this is something I've been thinking about starting for a while. It comes from my experience, not just seeing the lack of wellness opportunities in certain markets and certain spaces, but also knowing how difficult it is to build a company that's focusing on it. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the cyclical cycle of how we get here, is that, you know, a lot of wellness initiatives focus on profit, mm-hmm. right, as kind of its main KPI. That's what capitalism is all about, instead of access. So it's kind of about how much money can we get from the people that are participating instead of how many people have the opportunity to participate at all. Mm. And so the fund is really designed to support entrepreneurs, especially entrepreneurs like me, who aren't necessarily looked at as high-performing entrepreneurs, you know. Women of color get less than 1% of VC funding when they're building companies. There's not that many women-owned or people of color-led owned nonprofits that are operating beyond a specific capacity. It's like, okay, how do we make sure that the people that are even trying to do this work have the resources that they need to be able to thrive? Because if they can thrive, and if they can get these initiatives off the ground, then these initiatives can be able to support more people to get access to these resources. Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I also really like your use of the word underestimated. I think very often when someone doesn't fit into what is, like, very sadly, the image of what people think of when they hear yoga or business person, they get pigeonholed into like this little box, like, oh, they're not a yoga teacher, you're just a yoga teacher of color, or like, you're not a business person, you're like a woman business person. And I really just like the idea and the way that you're framing this. So you had your first grant. You just issued the first round of grants, right?
That's correct. So we just gave two grants to two really incredible entrepreneurs that are doing work, both in their own respective communities, to increase access to yoga in one hand and meditation in the other. And we currently have a second grant application that's open, and open until October 25th.
Nice. So what can our listeners do to support your venture?
If you yourself or somebody you know is an underestimated entrepreneur, please encourage them to apply. So check out the details for this grant round and keep an eye on future grant opportunities that we have. The other thing that we've created is a Patreon. where people can invest every month into more grant opportunities in the future. So we're actually building the first community-funded grant to make wellness more accessible, where you can go in and donate as little as $4 a month, or as much as you so choose, to make sure that more of these opportunities are available.
That's awesome. On your Instagram, you also mentioned something that I thought was another really cool way to kind of break the cycle that you were talking about of why people are not having access to wellness tools. And you were basically mentioning advice for people who are buying into the wellness industry. Do you remember this? You said, one, does the brand I support here make wellness more accessible for the people who need it the most? Two, what are the backgrounds and the beliefs of those in the executive level leaderships of this company? And the third one, when I invest this money here, who do I take that money away from? And I just thought that was really powerful for listeners who are listening to this right now to just think about that every purchase that you make is a choice about who you're supporting.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up too. I feel like a lot of us, we don't think that we have much capacity in changing the industry, but really most of our power, I think especially in wellness, money is the currency of power, right? It's the way to quantify what power looks like. And so it might not feel like taking a class at a studio that doesn't align with beliefs makes a difference, but it really does. Mm-hmm. And it also can help shift you into spaces where wellness is happening that's more accessible and kind of feel what that looks like. Because I think when spaces are designed for more people, they are safer for all people. And I think that's really important. We tend to forget that. Even if we feel like whatever it's designed for doesn't necessarily align with us, it's important to be able to invest and receive support from spaces that are thinking of really, truly trying to make spaces inclusive.
Yeah, I always think when I'm taking a yoga class, if I look around and every single person in there looks like me, why isn't anyone else comfortable coming into this space?
Yeah.
Nicole, you were recently on the August 2019 cover of Yoga Journal.
Yes.
So can we make note that all of the proceeds from the magazine rack sales of your cover are going to Reclamation Ventures?
Yeah. Can I just do a little, I can do a little blurb on that if it's helpful. So a big reason why I pushed the funds now is because I was recently chosen to be on the cover of Yoga Journal magazine, their August 2019 issue. And right after shooting the cover, the brand had posted a survey where they asked our community to vote on their next cover model, which isn't what we agreed on. And through further conversation with the brand, I realized that they didn't think that the picture of me would sell the magazine enough and wanted to put somebody else on the cover of the magazine who's been on the magazine in the past. And it was a really shameful experience for me. But I think more importantly, it's a really harmful experience to tell marginalized people who are often seen in the wellness community or featured or visible in the wellness community that they're not adequate enough to sell a magazine. Mm-hmm. And that kind of decision making when brands choose profit and profit margins over representation, over equity, over just being like solid human beings, it's causing a lot of what we see. And it's why people don't have opportunities. It was really ironic because they had a story on me, they had a story on Yoga Foster, and they were still planning on running those stories in the magazine. The issue wasn't with any of that. It was with my body and my face and my natural hair and whatever else they saw in my physical composition that did not feel worthy of the cover. So, after conversations with them, I had them agree to donate all of the proceeds from this magazine to the fund, to Reclamation Ventures, so that we're proactively investing in entrepreneurs who experience this all the time, because this doesn't just happen with one yoga brand on the cover of a magazine in a really blatant public way. Mm-hmm. This happens to underestimated people all the time. They might walk into a room with investors and the investor takes one look at them, doesn't even ask them what their story is or understand about their work, and decide based off what they look like, whether or not they deserve the funds. or seeing somebody who might not be the traditional able-bodied yoga instructor and automatically assuming that they're not a good teacher because they don't have the bodies that we assume make you a good yoga practitioner or a yoga teacher in this industry.
I can't even imagine what that felt like for you, and I appreciate you sharing that, and I hate that you went through that. So we're only going to buy your cover of Yoga Journal so that all the proceeds can get donated. Are there other publications or authors from the wellness industry that are better investments that we can read to change mindsets and support different underestimated authors? Any favorites you have?
Well, there's Woke Magazine, which does, I believe, a quarterly magazine, which I really love. I think that Black Girl on OM is having great conversations around self-care. For marginalized people, the accessible yoga community creates a ton of different resources and content on their social media channels and their site that I feel are much more representative of what we deserve as people in the wellness community.
Your response to Yoga Journal was super graceful and just amazing. So thanks for doing that, even though you should never have had to.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Before we go, would you mind sharing some of your social media handles and your websites so that I can share them on the show notes so our listeners have a direct link to you?
Sure. So I can be found online at NicoleAcardoza.com. So you can sign up for my email list and see upcoming events that I might have. I'm traveling a ton and I'm always teaching in a city or talking about the work, and I would love to have you there. I'm also Nicole A. Cardoza on Instagram, and it's the only social media platform right now I can keep up with. And that is a barely.
Well, you're keeping up with a lot of other stuff, so I don't blame you. Nicole, thank you so much for your time here today and your amazing work in all areas of the wellness industry. Is there anything else you'd like to share to leave our listeners with today?
No, just thank you so much for holding space for me and my work and what my work represents. It means a lot to me.
Absolutely. Thank you.